It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, and welcome to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host this evening, Jeff Sturtevant, filling in for Steve Taylor. Tonight's story takes us to a lonely gas station in the dead of night, where the quiet hours between customers are broken by a battered stranger, a warning scratched in blood, and a handful of coins that should have never changed hands. So settle in, dim the lights. The show is about to begin. Before we get to tonight's feature, we'd like to thank our dedicated supporters in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights patrons area. For just $7.99 a month, members enjoy ad-free listening, early access to new episodes, exclusive content, and full access to our complete archive, with discounted annual options available too. That opens the door to a sprawling library of audio horror, stretching back more than a decade, with chilling releases and classic episodes reaching all the way back to 2012. To find out more or join today, visit chillingtalesfordarknights.com. Thank you for helping us keep the darkness burning, month after month. Featured tonight, courtesy of Velox Books, our tale this evening is It's Usually Quiet Between 1 and 5, written by Michael Marks, and performed and produced by Drew Blood. If you enjoy tonight's story, be sure to check out Michael Marks' newest collection, Spiraling Down, 27 Tales of Horror and the Supernatural, available now on Amazon. We'll tell you more about it after the tale. And now, without further delay, I present to you, from author Michael Marks, It's Usually Quiet Between 1 and 5.
I had just finished up my tuna salad sandwich when the clock struck 1 a.m. Watching that hand tick over to the 1 was the sign that I'd made it halfway through my shift, and the rest of the night was likely going to be a breeze. People almost never traveled the road after 1 a.m., so at the most I would probably have 2 or 3 more people over the next 4 hours looking to get some gas. The hooker and vampire crowd rarely made their way to my place of employment, Earl's Gassin' Stop in the middle of bumfuck nowhere, which was fine by me. I snagged a pack of Reds from the cigarette rack behind me and tossed a 5 and a couple of quarters in the register to cover the cost before walking over to the front door and stepping just outside. The cool night air hit and sent a chill up my spine and to the base of my neck. Just above me, the neon sign hummed, interrupted by only the occasional pop. I looked up at it while it cast its dim red and blue glows down on my face. Earl's Gassin' STP. The O and the 2 apostrophes long dead, at least as long as I'd been there, which at that point was pushing somewhere around 3 years. Fix your fucking sign, Earl, I mumbled to myself with a laugh as I held the cigarette between my lips. You lazy old bastard. Earl was never going to fix the sign, though. Earl never fixed anything. There was a shelf inside that if you bumped it just right, it would come crashing down. It probably would have only taken a couple of screws to fix it, and Earl refused.
Store's fine,
he'd say in his crotchety old man voice.
You act like it's falling apart or something.
His tone becoming clearly more accusatory with the second part of his statement. I'll fix it, I'd say to him, only to be dismissed with a wave of the hand and grumbling about liability insurance. The shelf instead remained stocked with paper goods to avoid any potential breakage, and I eventually gave up the argument. I was only 3 puffs into my cigarette when a dark red Honda came rolling up the road and pulled into the station. The car was coated with a layer of dirt that shone prominently underneath the harsh fluorescence that hung above the pumps. I couldn't see the driver through the windows, the light simply reflecting the world around the car rather than giving me a glimpse inside. The car sat idling there for a few moments, the buzz of the lights and the sound of the grumbling engine being the only sounds cutting through the otherwise quiet night. I felt an uneasy vibe in the air as I watched the mysterious new arrival. I could see stilted movements from inside the car, but was unable to make out any defined shapes. Suddenly, the engine shut off, and after a few moments of silence, I heard muffled shouting and saw the car rock back and forth for a few moments. I threw my cigarette down, ready to go check on what was happening. The feeling of unease replaced by a very real anxiety. As soon as I took my first step away from the front of the store, though, the driver's side door swung open and a man stepped out into the light. He was probably in his early 40s. His hair was thinning on top of his head and stubble framed his wide-cheeked face. He was wearing a striped button-down shirt with short sleeves and a black tie dangled loosely from his neck. His sunken eyes caught mine, and he froze for a second, suddenly becoming aware that I'd been standing there the whole time.
"Hey, you all right, man?"
I took another step forward as I spoke. The man looked truly disheveled, and as he walked around the front of his car, this became more apparent. His clothes were caked with dried mud that flecked off his khaki pants as he walked past the pumps and in my direction.
I'm fine.
He spoke in a low and timid voice.
"I've just had a long night."
He avoided my eyes as he walked past me and into the store. I noticed even more dried mud on the back of his shirt and his skin. There were little rips in his clothes, and I could see scratches on his arms. One of his hands looked as if it had a makeshift cloth bandage. Just a piece of torn shirt wrapped around the palm. I could see blood staining the edges. It looked as if he had had a long night. Hell, it looked as if he had just fallen down a rather steep hill and got in a bad fight with every rock on his way to the bottom. Sparing one last glance back at his car, I followed him into the store. As I walked over to my spot behind the counter, the man weaved his way to the coolers in the back and pulled out a bottled water. He cracked it open and drank the whole thing in just a few seconds. He took out 2 more and walked back up to the counter, spilled water still dribbling from his chin.
"And a pack of lights,"
he said, dropping the waters in front of me and fishing out his wallet. The look in his eyes was tired and defeated. I felt an urge to ask again if he was okay, but held back. Whatever had happened to him, it probably wasn't something he wanted to discuss with some shithill gas station clerk in the middle of the night. 9:45, I said, grabbing his pointed out brand of cigarettes from the rack behind me and handing it to him directly. Something told me he was going to need them handy. "Anything else for you?" He shook his head and dropped a $10 bill on the counter before rummaging through his pockets and bringing out a handful of change. He counted out 45 cents and handed it to me. I dropped it into the register without making my own count and handed him a $1 bill. He nodded at me with an odd look of relief. He shoved a dollar into his pocket and gathered up his cigarettes and the bottles of water. Before I could even thank him, he was walking toward the door, his mind seemingly already a few steps ahead of him and dragging him along. I expected to hear the doorbell as the man headed back out to his car. But instead, he stopped just short of the door and looked back at me. He stared at me for a few seconds, his eyes full of what looked like guilt. It made me feel uneasy enough to say something.
"Can I help you with something else, man?"
My hand went to the mini bat that Earl kept below the counter, just in case.
"No, just..."
He stuck the cigarettes in his pocket and used his now free hand to wipe his brow. He looked exhausted and scared, not threatening.
Just be careful working out here at night, okay, kid?
You got it, buddy. I nervously laughed at his sudden concern, not sure what else to say. The whole situation was starting to get under my skin, and honestly, I just wanted him out the door.
Yeah.
He spoke to the night as he turned towards the door and opened it. I watched him every step as he got to his car and got in. I saw the spark of a lighter for a second, and then the engine started. I waited what felt like an eternity for him to pull away from the pumps and head on down the road. I could feel him looking at me from behind the reflection of his windshield, just staring. I couldn't see his eyes, but I knew. When he finally drove off and vanished down the road, I realized I'd been holding my breath and gripping the bat with white knuckles. I let out a huge sigh of relief and forced a laugh, even though the general unease of the guy's presence had yet to leave me. I dropped my ass on the little stool behind the counter and put my face in my hands. Perils of the night shift. Sometimes you get a weird customer, I thought to myself. At least it'll be a nice little anecdote for my friends later. I laughed into my palms and shook it off.
Oh, God.
Finally tilting my head and opening my eyes. I nearly fell out of my chair when I saw someone standing in front of me. He had come out of nowhere. The bell over the door never rang when he entered. I didn't hear a car pull up. No footsteps through the store as he walked up to the counter. Not even that itching feeling of a presence when someone is close to you. He was like a ghost. The way he looked certainly didn't help in dampening the shock either. He was tall, well over 6 feet if I had to guess. He stood with his head bent down towards me and his hands flat on the counter. There was not a single hair on his head or face, not even eyebrows. I could see the fluorescent lights reflect off his cue ball-like skull. His skin was pale and veiny, just on the verge of looking translucent. It looked as if you had stuck him under a black light, he would glow. He was dressed in a black turtleneck and black dress pants. Something told me that if I looked below the counter, I would see well taken care of dress shoes with a mirror shine that equaled that of his head. The strangest aspect was the expression he wore on his face. An unsettling stiff smile stretched up the corners of his mouth, yet he kept his thin lips in a tight line. Even stranger, his eyes were closed, yet his head tracked me as I got up off the stool and kept away from the counter far enough that I could feel the price boards of the cigarettes against my back.
Can I help you?
My voice cracked as I spoke, and my eyes flicked to the front windows. No car was out by the pumps, which just tracked with every other element of this freak's sudden appearance. I tried to tell myself that he was just part of the late-night hooker and vampire crowd out for a stroll at nearly 2 a.m., a minimum of 10 miles from anything in either direction. He tapped his fingers against the counter and slowly turned his face towards the pumps before slowly turning back towards me, as if he was looking at me through his eyelids. He raised a hand from the counter and pointed down before slowly shaking his head no.
Listen, man, if you don't want anything, I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
I didn't even sound brave to myself, let alone to anyone else. He pressed his pointed index finger against the counter and again shook his head no. My eyes moved below where he was pointing to and saw the mini bat. Is this guy warning me not to go for the mini bat?
How?
What the fuck? The realization swirled in my head as I attempted to swallow my heart back down into my body after its sudden jump to my throat. He cocked his head to the side and his smile went crooked for a moment before he turned his back to me. I saw his hand go up towards his face and heard something like a hiss of air preceding the wet crunching sound. I stepped forward to grab the mini bat, and his other hand shot up from his side and his finger wagged back and forth as if to say tisk tisk. Another wet crunch came, followed by what sounded like spitting and laughter at the same time. The man quieted himself and turned back towards me. That same oddly stretched smile was on his face, but blood leaked out from the closed left eye. He held up the hand he had to his face, and the tip of the finger he had previously pointed down at the mini-bat was now missing. Blood streaked down over his hand and down the sleeve of his turtleneck. I shrunk back at the disgust inside as he aggressively knocked everything from my countertop onto the floor. The look on his face never changing, even as various knickknacks scattered to the floor and the register spilled cash and change out at his feet. He ran his still intact hand over the clean white countertop and nodded yes, not to me, but to himself. Satisfaction with a job well done. I knew what he was about to do, and all I could do was watch in curious and horrified silence, frozen with my back against the cigarettes. "It's here," the word scrawled crudely by the mutilated finger. More quickly followed. "He took it from us." The man raised his intact hand again for another tisk-tisk gesture to signify that taken from them was probably not a good idea. His left eye flicked wildly behind his bleeding eye socket. It looked as if it were pulsing.
"I don't even know who you're..."
I jumped in, attempting to defend myself before I even knew what the fuck was going on. A pointless effort. The man held up his intact finger once again and put it to his lips, that stretched smile never changing. Yet I could still somehow hear him shush me. The man lowered the finger, and his lips began to part, revealing that there was something in his mouth. Something large that appeared to be the cause of his silence. His eyelids opened as well, slowly revealing dark voids beyond. My eyes went again to the mini-bat, but there was a wonder if it would even do any good. Something that looked like a tongue quickly shot from inside the darkness of his left eye socket and cleaned the blood from around it. An involuntary reaction struck me, causing me to attempt to climb away on the cigarette display for a second out of pure revulsion, a feeling that would wash over me increasingly in the coming moments. His mouth opened fully, revealing what was held inside. A single massive eye flicked back and forth between the thin lips, and his eyelids curled upwards in smiles, revealing small rows of pointy teeth. Individual tongues licked around the eyes, mouths, like a normal person would lick their lips. Confusion and horror froze me in place as I watched the body of the thing in front of me twist and contort. I managed to unglue myself from my spot long enough to make an attempt for my weapon while it was distracted with whatever the hell it was doing. The hand missing a finger darted over the counter and grabbed the small bat before I could even reach it, its arm bending in odd ways, making horrible breaking and cracking noises as if defying its own design as it swung the bat once in front of me and then threw it across the store. I could hear one of the glass cooler doors shatter. The eye and the mouth fixated on me as I stepped back again and watched the rest of its transformation in horror, too scared of how quick it had been to even try to make a move. It turned its back to me but quickly bent its spine and neck, causing its head to fall lazily backwards like the neck had been snapped. Its arms bent oddly, the fingers twisting and the shoulders rotating so the elbows bending the wrong way became more like the right way. Its remaining fingers found purchase on the counter. A split began to form at the top of its head, the top now facing down towards the counter. And thick, soupy liquid with the dark red color of blood began to leak out. The mouths laughed as the crack got longer and wider, splitting them apart and stopping just short of the smiling eye. White points began to jut out from the edges of the seam like small teeth, and a large tongue lolled out, slapping itself against the counter as the two small mouths alternated between hisses and giggles. It lurched forward and scrambled over the counter, its legs seeming to come ahead of its arms. Out of instinct, I dodged out of the way of the horror now coming at me, and it smashed full force into the display of cigarettes, sending unopened packs sprawling across the floor. As it scrambled to get back into its odd crab walk position, I darted forward and leapt over the counter to make for the door. It managed to turn just in time to catch my foot with its mangled hand and trip me up. I slammed down on the other side of the counter, smashing my shoulder on the floor. As I attempted to recover myself, the thing crawled over the counter, getting between me and the door, blocking my route of escape. I slid backwards on my ass across and down one of the aisles and towards the coolers in the back, hoping I could find the mini bat. I worried if I took the time to get to my feet, the thing would pounce forward again. But as I slid backwards, it instead stalked me. The giant cyclopean eye mouth watching me intensely. The tiny cruel mouth eyes chattering and hissing. And the wicked tongue flailing back and forth from the center of its face. It jumped up on the shelves, crawling across them like an insect, keeping slow pace with me as my back moved ever steadily towards the cooler behind me, filled with tall boys and malt liquor. I could hear it laughing. It was toying with me, relishing in my fear as it defied logic with its movement and existence in general. I slid out of the aisle to see the broken cooler. Sodas spilled all over the floor and the mini-bat laying among them. It was a few aisles away, and I knew I was going to need to get to my feet to make it over there. I looked back at the thing as it moved towards me, still crawling over the shelves like a spider moving through its web towards a fly. Suddenly, its hand gripped a shelf I knew very well, a shelf filled with paper towels and plates because it couldn't hold much weight. As it shifted its weight, the shelf came free and the creature which had been displaying a disturbing grace suddenly fell sprawling to the floor, with the contents of the shelf spilling down on its deformed body. I sprung to my feet without thinking and tipped the whole damn shelving unit over on it as it attempted to flail itself back to its feet. The heavy unit came down with a thud on its body, trapping it. I could hear it screaming, and the tiny mouth shouted what sounded like curses in some language I couldn't understand. It pushed itself up against the weight, now pinning its body to the floor. I dove towards the mini-bat and snatched it up from a cold pool of soda. The thing had pulled its body halfway free as I ran back over to it and brought the tiny Mountain Dew-soaked club down on its arm. It howled in what I could hope was more pain than anger and reached out for my leg. I stepped back and brought the bat down repeatedly. Two more times on its arm and then two times on its hideous head. The seam widened and more of that viscous blood-like liquid leaked out onto the floor. I could see tiny teeth fly out of the small mouth eyes and the skull cracked. Finally, with one more brutal blow, the eye mouth popped like a balloon, and a pus-like liquid squirted out over the floor and mingled with the soda dripping from the bat and the oil-like blood. The thing fell still. I poked it a couple of times with the bat, wondering if I should hit it again or just run out of the store. It didn't move, and judging from the chunks of brain matter and the skull scattered over the floor, I decided it was dead. I stepped over its body and around the knocked-over shelves on my way up to the counter. I needed to call somebody, the police maybe. What would I even say? It was as I crossed in front of the store's front windows that I noticed them. standing beneath the harsh neons of the sign outside and backlit by the fluorescence that hung over the pumps. There were at least a dozen of them standing perfectly still like statues outside, the lights gleaming off their bald heads. Each of them was dressed the same as the thing I'd just killed. Their eyes were closed, and their pale thin lips were pulled tightly closed into half smiles. The closest one stepped forward and opened the door, and the rest followed closely behind him. I gripped the mini bat tightly in my fist, feeling the blood of the one I'd killed drip down over my knuckles as I backed away. They funneled through the door in a wedge pattern, the leader walking steadily closer to me. His eye mouth opened to reveal a black iris and pupil shifting beneath his lips for a few seconds before it looked over towards its fallen double. I backed away, my feet kicking change and the bills from the falling cash register out of the way as I moved. The thing kept pace. The other ones behind it were now opening their eyes and their small mouths began to whisper and laugh.
"Come on then!"
I found myself screaming at them. Now so certain I was going to die, that bizarre calm replaced my fear and was translating to bravery.
"I'll fuck you all up. Who's first? Huh?"
Two of them broke off from the back and walked towards the fallen one to lift the shells off its body. The one still approaching me began to split from the top of their heads, their seams opening to reveal their long pointed tongues. The ones in the back began to twist and contort into their more unnatural spider-like forms as the leader walked through the change at his feet. Suddenly it raised a hand, and they all snapped back into their mock human forms in an instant, as if their transformation was on a rubber band that had pulled them back into place. I stood there holding the bat out in front of me as if it would keep them from lunging forward and tearing me to shreds. They did not leap forward, though. They stopped dead in their tracks, in fact, all but the two who had lifted the shelf and were now carrying the limp, twisted corpse back towards the door. The one in the lead knelt among the money sprawled out at his feet and began to pick through the coins with its slender, pale fingers. It tossed them aside one by one until it found what it was looking for. It plucked a quarter from the pile and held it up to the black eye behind its lips as if studying it. Out of curious instinct, I lowered the bat and leaned forward to see that the small silver coin was not a quarter. In fact, it was like nothing I'd ever seen. It shimmered with different colors as it turned in the light. Purple, green, red, and blue, all the matter of a single twist of the wrist. The thing closed its massive black eye into an unassuming tight-lipped smile, seemingly satisfied. It dropped the prism coin into its palm and closed a fist around it before standing back up. The others behind it began to shuffle out the door, and all I could do was stand there puzzled as to what the fuck was happening. The others had nearly all left the store when the leader turned its back to me and walked over to the counter, pointing down towards what the first one had written there. "It's here. He took it from us." The change the man had given me. It clicked in my mind. I hadn't even bothered to count it. I just dropped it in the register without looking at it. Whatever he had stolen from these things, he had given to me. To throw them off his trail, to hide it, to just fuck with me. It didn't really matter. They had found what they were looking for. It pointed its other finger towards the mess from where I'd killed the first one, and I could see it shake its head yes, in approval. It set the coin on the table for a moment, and without turning to face me, it gave me a slow, soft round of applause. The fucking thing was clapping for me because I'd killed one of its kind. It picked the coin back up and walked out the door, joining the others. I stood there confused and terrified as I watched the bald, twisted creatures walk out past the edge of the gas station lights and into the darkness. I stood there then, and long after.
You've just heard It's Usually Quiet Between 1 and 5, written by Michael Marks, performed and produced by Drew Blood, and featured tonight courtesy of Velox Books. This story was originally featured on Season 7, Episode 9 of Drew Blood's Dark Tales, back on October 11th, 2024. And there's plenty more where this came from. Drew, of course, is also the host and narrator of Drew Blood's Dark Tales, his weekly horror podcast, now in its 10th season. Tonight offered a wonderful opportunity to revisit one of Drew's performances from our archives. When tonight's show is over, be sure to seek out Drew Blood's Dark Tales to hear even more of Drew's unforgettable performances. You should also look for Michael Marks' latest collection, Spiraling Down, 27 Tales of Horror and the Supernatural, available now on Amazon.com in hardcover, paperback, audiobook, and Kindle. In this chilling volume from the renowned No Sleep author, a paranormal skeptic finds his beliefs shattered inside a notoriously haunted house. A lost journal recounts a camping trip gone terribly wrong. A teenager investigates a knock at the basement door of an abandoned church in the woods. And airline passengers glimpse tentacled monsters outside of the plane windows. These tales, and many more, lead even deeper into the terrifying unknown. And once you start spiraling down, there's no escape. Early readers have had plenty to say about it. One reviewer called it an incredible must-read nightmare session, praising its scares, suspense, mystery, and world-building. While another wrote simply, "I loved how well the stories were layered in this book. At one point, it was like going from one great story to another." I agree, really great book. So when you're finished spending your night with us, be sure to seek out Spiraling Down, and then head over to Drew Blood's Dark Tales for even more from the man who brought tonight's nightmare to life. There's no shortage of darkness waiting for you. Thanks for your support, and for spending part of your night with me here in the shadows. And if you haven't already, please consider following Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, leaving us a 5-star rating or review, and sharing the show with a fellow fan of the macabre. You can find even more terrifying tales at creepypastastories.com, and stay up to date with Evil Idol 2025, our ongoing annual voice acting competition, and all our latest releases by subscribing to our YouTube channel. Memberships are available now at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where for just $7.99 per month, you'll receive ad-free listening, early access, exclusive content, and entry to our complete audio archive, with discounted annual options available, and a vault of nightmares and dark delights extending all the way back to 2012. Follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok. And as always, thank you for spending part of your night with us. And now, fellow lover of the macabre, I'm afraid our evening draws to a close. You've been listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Until next time, I'm your host, Jeff Sturdivant, filling in for Steve Taylor, reminding you to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listeners. Sweet dreams.